Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome. I see that people are starting to come into the session. I'll give everybody a couple of moments to come in. All right. Well, we've got a lot to do today, so let's get started. I'm Joanna, and I'm so, so happy that you're here. There are nearly 150 of us gathering today, and it's so good to be with lots of you that I already know and love, and also so good to see people that are new to me. Welcome, welcome to all of you. Welcome to Wicked Stepmothers and Lowly Handmaidens, Transmuting Jealousy into Empowerment. We're going to be together for the next 3 hours, and there's going to be a lot. We're going to move through a lot in these 3 hours. We're going to be moving quickly. There's so much that I want to share. And, you know, this topic of jealousy could easily be a 5-day retreat, if not more. So think of this as an intensive container that will move you to the next place with the dynamics and the golden details that you're going to uncover today. But of course, it's not the whole kit and caboodle. It never is. Today is going to be a catalyzer, and a powerful one at that. We're going to be in sacred space, and we're going to go deep. We're going to be doing a lot of deep personal work. This workshop is primarily personal work for you. But that being said, if you are a transformational practitioner, and I know a lot of people here are transformational practitioners, you'll pick up a lot through our time together about how to apply all of this to your own client work. It won't be extensive like in the Sacred Depths practitioner training or the Befriend Your Fear technique intensive, you know, both in which I teach specific techniques to use with clients, but you'll get enough to start stirring the pot around all of it. So we'll be here for 3 hours. Settle in. Stay present. Eliminate distractions. It's so easy to get distracted these days, but this is big work and important work, and I really want to invite you to make this sacred space for you. The more present that you are, the more that you'll really receive for yourself. And I want to start by lighting a candle for all of us to really bring us into this space together and to just help us begin to get focused so that we can hold this big work that's ahead of us today. So I'm going to light a candle. And with this flame, we honor our mother and her mother and her mother before and all of the mothers and the grandmothers and the sisters and the aunties and the friends, all of the women who have lit flames to warm their communities, lit flames to feed their families. Lit flames to remember the fire in their own hearts. We honor those women and we ask that their highest energy be with us as we move through our work today. Now, listen closely, sisters, to what I'm going to say next. Listen not just with your ears, but with your heart. Listen deeply. This is important. For at least many hundreds of years now, if not much longer, there's been a strange and sometimes hidden phenomenon that has existed amongst women. On the one hand, we love and appreciate each other deeply. We want for other women to succeed. We want for other women to have love and success and money and health and happiness and everything in between. We maybe feel proud and hopeful when women shatter glass ceilings, achieve notable accomplishments, become famous, or step into leadership roles. We maybe cheer on our female friends, want to see them shine, support them emotionally and otherwise. We maybe go deep with our sisters, get vulnerable with our sisters, want to hear their vulnerabilities. The bonds that we create with women can be magical, can be lifelines for us. We love other women. We cherish them. We're deeply invested in their well-being. So much of our collective strength and so much of society's collective strength is related to women loving, appreciating, supporting, and joining forces with other women. But that's only half of the story, sisters. The other half, the more hidden half, usually goes like this. Perhaps we are deeply envious of what other women have, of the size of their business, of the amount of followers they have, of their income, of the quality of their work, of their marriage, of their home, of their body, of their beauty, of their age, and more. And when we are envious, jealous, you could say, we feel it. We look at these women and compare them to ourselves and oftentimes feel bad about ourselves. Terrible about ourselves, really, about our appearance or our intelligence or our ability to attract or our ability to succeed or beyond. We maybe beat ourselves up. We judge ourselves harshly. Perhaps even some self-hatred rises to the surface. We punish ourselves with the cruelest words possible, or we feel bad for ourselves. Victimized. We feel maybe the world is against us, or maybe that other woman is against us. We worry we'll never get it right. We'll never get what we want. Maybe we stop ourselves from putting ourselves out there. Or maybe we fall into a false self-thinking that if we're more like her, we'll get what we want. We self-sabotage. We obsess. We spend more time on social media comparing and making ourselves feel worse. We feel drained. And we spend less time then on ourselves, focused on self-nourishment. Or maybe we feel that she has taken what is rightfully ours away from us. Her success has robbed us of our success. Her good luck has robbed us of our luck. Her landing that client has robbed us of a client. her brilliant idea detracts from or outshines our brilliant idea. She got there before we did, maybe, and so now we have no right to it. Or maybe our envy, our jealousy, causes us to judge her. We decide that she's too big, too loud, too visible, too power-hungry, too money-hungry, too surface-oriented, too sexy, too promiscuous, on and on and on. Or maybe our jealousy has us worried or paranoid that this woman will literally steal from us, steal our ideas, steal our relationships or our good fortune, purposefully take what is ours. Or possibly, perhaps, our jealousy has caused us to steal from her, or ridicule her, or gossip about her, or stab her in the back somehow, embarrass her, or betray her in some way. Or maybe we've felt jealousy onto us from other women, and in reaction to their jealousy, we've judged them, made them other, and also shrunk ourselves, made ourselves teenier and tinier to avoid being a threat to others. No matter what the expression of jealousy, whether it ranges from self-ridicule to self-pity to ridicule of others or more, no matter what the expression, it pretty much always feels awful, whether we consciously realize it in the moment or not. It pretty much always contributes to feeling worse about ourselves. It always separates us from our goodness. It always holds us back from being the person we truly desire to be. It almost always causes pain and creates some sort of self-sabotage. And it almost always, in one way or another, separates us from other women. It makes them other. It makes us other. It divides us. And as if all that weren't enough, the other thing that goes hand in hand with jealousy is shame. There aren't many spaces, really barely any at all, where it's safe to even speak about jealousy or even competition, because we've been told by culture, by society, by religion, and sometimes by our own family that to be competitive or to be jealous is to be shameful, to be ugly, to be monstrous, to be bad, to make us unworthy. And there's no story more well-known than the story of Cinderella, than the story of the jealous, wicked stepmother and the jealous, wicked stepsisters that illustrate this. The wicked stepmother and her daughters are the villains, the bad ones, the ones punished in the end. But as we'll see through our time together today, this story goes way deeper than it seems. And we will also see that it's simply not true that women are more prone to jealousy than men. It's the patriarchal culture that has made it so. There's so much more here than meets the eye. The wicked stepmother and Cinderella are inextricably linked and actually hold healing power for each other. More on that soon, but for now, what happens when culture and society tell us to be ashamed of our jealousy? Then, it's not only the jealousy itself that causes so much pain and havoc, but the shame of the jealousy intensifies everything. The shame causes us to hate our own selves when we're jealous. We judge it. We tell ourselves there's something wrong with us for having these feelings and these impulses, that we're bad, rotten. We maybe pretend like the jealousy isn't there. We sweep it under the rug. We put it into the shadows. But of course, just like anything that we put into the shadows, the jealousy festers in the crags. It gets bigger and stronger and more potent. We're here today to take the next steps in putting an end to all of this, to the shame, to the ways that jealousy impacts us, our businesses, our relationships, our well-being. We're here to take the next steps in healing this phenomenon inside of ourselves and collectively. We're here to activate new cycles of deeper compassion and love for ourselves and others. Because here's the thing. There is something on the other side of jealousy, something that can be transmuted from jealousy if navigated correctly and consciously, something incredible, something magical. It's called empowerment. Empowerment inside of ourselves, empowerment of others, and empowerment with others. And through our work today, we'll see the connection and how to harness it, how to find and harness the superpower of empowerment that's hidden and embedded inside of jealousy. And just so you know, I personally haven't been immune to any of this. I don't share any of this from a high pedestal at all. I've had my fair share of feeling jealous, of judging myself poorly against others, of sabotaging because of jealousy, of having others be jealous of me. And through the years, I've really worked with it, worked with the shadows and the dynamics, and a lot has shifted. So much around my negative self-talk, so much around my comparison with others, so much around my getting triggered, and so much around my relationships with others. I can honestly say that I wouldn't have been able to create the business that I have today had I not deeply worked with these pieces. And just so that there's no myth of perfection here, my work on it isn't done. Deep work like this is never a once and done. I consistently come back to this work for myself. It's a journey. And so this is our work for today. It's big work to get to the next level of undoing all of these inner narratives and unburdening the parts of ourselves that we've put into shadow so that we can have more freedom, more self-love, so that we're not ashamed to claim our genius and express all of who we are. And I'll just share that, and for those of you that have worked with me and do work with me, you've heard me say this 100 times, and I'll say it again. There's a difference between a breakthrough and a transformation. Through our work together today, my intention is that we have many breakthroughs to move those new awarenesses and those breakthroughs through transformation. I really invite you to see our work today as a catalyst and a beginning. And we'll talk more about that later. So we'll be doing a lot of inner work. We'll be taking it step by step so that it all sinks in. This work, we're going to be doing it in layers. It's a step-by-step journey. We're going to start off by shedding light and creating awareness. And then we'll move to other levels of learning and transformation, not just the mental or intellectual learning of learning and transformation. We'll move to the soul level and the heart level and the body level. So that means that we'll be working with embodiment. We'll be working with reclaiming. We'll be doing activation. We'll be using the Cinderella story as a powerful archetypal metaphor. And my intention is that you will walk away holding the energetics of all of this very differently. that you will really have a deeper knowing that will lead to action. Our time together today, let me also say this. My intention is not to tie it all up in a neat bow. We're stirring the cauldron here. We have to get messy a little bit. I want to leave things open for you to really find yourself in it. And we'll be a little interactive today. So I'll talk in a bit right now, but throughout I'll be opening up for shares and reflections and questions, and we'll have a lot of time at the end for that as well. As we step in, I also want to share that you may experience some moments of resistance as we move through, feeling like either you want to run away or this is stupid or, you know, whatever it is. That is normal and natural. Maybe moments of confusion. And that's because we're looking at some really tough things. What we're looking at today is sometimes hard to look at, right? So if you feel any of those things, just notice it. Know that it's normal. Call it out as resistance and stick with the process. Don't be too expert or smarty pants. Especially if you're an expert or a smarty pants like me, open your ears and your heart. I know that if you're here, you've already done a lot of inner work. And once you've done a certain level of inner work, the next transformation level and the next breakthroughs are in the details and the subtleties and in the willing to look at what you've already looked at before. So stay open. Stick with the process. Stick with me to the end. And with all of that, let me ask you to take a moment and consider and write down, why are you here? Why are you here? What's your intention for our time together? What would you like to receive through our time together today? And what's your intention for how you would like to show up through our time together today? Is it to show up with curiosity or with openness or with a sense of humor or with heart? Is it maybe to not get distracted? What's your intention of how you want to show up today? And so take a moment and look at your intention for our time together and your intention for how you want to show up. And take a moment and set those intentions for yourself. Really take a moment to set those intentions, take them seriously. So I want to take a few moments. We've already started to step in to this, but I want to take just a few minutes right now for each of us to acknowledge the role that jealousy plays in our lives. This is an important piece because, as I said earlier, so often jealousy is put into the shadows. It's made bad, it's made wrong, and then what happens is we don't fully, just with an open heart, acknowledge the ways that jealousy shows up for us. We try to hide from it or fight it or pretend like it's not there, or sweep it under the rug because we're ashamed of it in one way or another. We're scared to look at it. And so the very first piece of all of this work is to be able to acknowledge how it shows up, to be honest with ourselves, to be kind and loving as we look clearly at how these patterns show up in our lives. So what we're going to do is I'm going to just name some, not all, of the ways that jealousy might be showing up for you. And what I'd like for you to do is put a hand on your heart and put a hand on your heart right now, connecting with your heart. And as I say each one, if it's something that is true for you, if it's something that you've experienced, I invite you, with your hand on your heart, with your self-love intact, to acknowledge it and to say yes out loud. And know that you are in good company here. Again, these things are put into the shadow, but it's things that we all experience. So, hand on heart, saying yes when I share something that is true for you. If you've ever judged someone else for their looks, judged someone else for their clothing, if you've ever felt superior because you felt smarter, if you've ever felt superior because of the amount of money you have, if you've ever felt superior to another because of the amount of business or success that you have, if you've ever felt threatened by another woman's power, if you've ever made catty remarks about another woman behind her back, if you've ever felt so jealous of another person or intimidated that you've stopped being their friend or never even started, if you've made fun of another woman to her face, if you've felt like you are being too big or too loud for others, if you've felt scared to talk about your success with other women, if you've ever felt judged by another woman, if there's a female legacy of betrayal in your family, if you've ever slept with someone else's significant other, if you've ever felt bad about yourself or your future success because someone else has the same message or ideas as you do, if you've ever felt bad about yourself because others grow their work or business or success more quickly than you, if you've ever gone on a social media comparison bender in one way or another, if you ever have secretly hated another woman because she's more successful, or judged someone that you believe has more success than you. If you've ever held yourself back or gotten distracted or sabotaged yourself because someone else, quote, has done it better than you. If you've ever taken credit for another woman's idea. If you've ever let another person steal your idea, even though it angered or hurt you. If you've ever felt powerful by excluding someone or speaking about them behind their back. If you've ever made yourself smaller or dimmed your light to make another woman feel more comfortable or more accepting of you. If you've ever lost a friendship because of gossip or jealousy. May we forgive ourselves for the ways that we've shown up in jealousy or the ways that we've shrunk in the presence of jealousy. May we love ourselves and have compassion. May we take the next steps in releasing any shame that we have. May we know that we are more than enough. Okay. Let's keep on going and take it to the next level. I want to ask you some journaling questions. And I promise you, I'll stop talking in a little. We'll open up for some shares, too. But some questions first. Number one, what has the impact of jealousy, either from others or from yourself, been on your life? What has the impact of jealousy been on your life, either jealousy from yourself or jealousy from others? Next question. When you experience jealousy, what are the beliefs and fears that you're believing and feeling about yourself and your life? So when you experience jealousy, what are the beliefs and fears that come up for you? So for example, when you're jealous of others, do you believe that you're not enough? Or not beautiful enough, or not smart enough? Do you believe that there's something wrong with you? Do you believe that the person you're jealous of will get all the visibility or business or love or whatever it is, or that there's no opportunity left for you? When you experience jealousy, do you feel that you'll never be successful or that you'll lose everything? Everything will fall apart. Another example is maybe when you're feeling jealous, you believe that there is a hierarchy to everything in life and that you always need to be on top, right? So take a moment with that. When you are experiencing jealousy, what are the beliefs and the fears that move through you about yourself, about your life? Let's add to that, when you experience jealousy, what are the beliefs or the fears that you're believing and feeling about others? That they're better than you, or maybe happier than you, they're out to get you, maybe that they're part of a club that you could never be part of, or something else. When you experience jealousy, what are the beliefs and fears that you're believing about yourself and also about others and your life? So these fears and these beliefs are what motivate and activate our jealousy. They're there deeply implanted inside of us. And when we feel jealous, it's because these fears and these beliefs give rise to the jealousy. But that's not where it ends. These beliefs and fears give rise to the jealousy. And then we experience our jealousy, and then we experience the fallout of whatever our jealousy puts in motion, which in turn works to strengthen and even more deeply establish those original fears and beliefs. In sacred depths, we call this a wheel of self-sabotage. When a fear or belief gives rise to a self-sabotaging action, and then the self-sabotaging action creates a result that fortifies or intensifies the original belief or fear, and probably also adds other fears to the mix, which then in turn poises you to take more self-sabotaging actions. So it's like a wheel that works on itself. So let's take this a step further. Pick one or maybe two of the beliefs or fears that you just identified for yourself. One or two that feel the biggest or most impactful for you. And whatever that fear or belief is, the one or two that feel the biggest, most impactful, how did you learn this fear or belief from your parental figures, from your parents or parental figures? How did you learn this fear or belief from your parents or parental figures? Take a moment with that. How did you learn these from your parents or parental figures? Next question. You may have already started to answer this one, but see what this one wants to bring up. What were the events or series of events that activated or gave birth to this belief or this fear? What were the events or series of events that activated or gave birth to these, whatever you identify, these beliefs, these fears? And then one last question for now. What did you learn from your mother or mother figure about jealousy? If you had one in your life, what did you learn from your mother or mother figure about jealousy? Either from her directly or from observing her. What did you learn from your mother or mother figure about jealousy? Okay, let's pause here for a moment because we've been through a lot so far. Still have a lot to go, but I want to pause and hear from a few of you. What's coming up for you? What are you seeing so far? What's rising to the surface for you? Star 2 to raise your hand. And if you're calling from the web, hopefully you have instructions on how to do that. I'd like to share star 2. Renee.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
So much is coming up. I mean, the two core beliefs are I'm not enough and I'm lacking resources. And so, like, you know, they have more skills, they have better teachers, they have more money, they have better support system, like, all resources, like, in every sense, you know, is, like,
yeah.
what I really feel coming up. And that, like, the what's wrong with me is, like, the question that's, like, always percolating, right? Like, what's wrong with me? Like, why can't I do that, right? And I mean, it's very clear when you're like, what were the beliefs from your parental figures? I mean, I don't even know that I have specific, but it's been like ingrained, you know, from when I was, before I could talk, right? Like I've never felt like I'm good enough. Like I always have to prove more. And then this like idea of like not having, we don't have the financial resources that other people have, right? It's like,
yeah.
I still hear my mom talk about that.
Yeah.
And the other big piece, and I've seen this for a long time in my mom especially, is like she, for as long as I can remember, has put herself in the position of the Cinderella with my grandmother and my aunt, my dad's brother's wife, so not her sister, as the wicked stepmother and wicked death sister, you know, even like referring to my grandma recently when she thought no one was listening as like the old bat. Like,
yeah. Well, that's
like,
yeah,
that is like the, so just seeing how she, all those things that you referenced where my hand was on my heart and I was like saying yes to all of them. I also can see that is where I learned that.
Yeah. Yeah, you've had a really good model for all of it.
Yeah.
And what, you know, so much of what you're bringing up is important, and I want to just pull one thing out for all of us, which is that I'm not enough is oftentimes also related to there isn't enough. Both are, right, both are forms of scarcity or not enoughness. And when there's not enoughness happening, it's breeding ground for jealousy. It's like the perfect environment for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the one other piece I would just say is, like, I just really see the reach of this in my work, because it's like, I will, like, see something on a magazine cover, and I'll be, like, a couple years ago this happened, I had a program I created, and I saw the same thing on a magazine cover, and I was like, great, now who needs it?
Right. Yeah, that idea has already, like, been done. Yes. No, it's
right.
So common. That's why it's one of the things. Thank you. Yeah. Good. We've got time for another share. Oh, here we go. There's more shares. Tammy.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can.
Good. what came up for me is that, you know, where the last question, like, what did you learn from your mother or your mother figure? I love my mom dearly, but there's always, like, been this thing between me and her, and I've always tried to figure out, like, what it is. Like, I do all this work with women, and I just, like, there's this thing with my mom and me, and I can't figure it out. And what came up for me that maybe didn't answer the question, but, like, was part of the thing, was that my mom and my dad got divorced, and there was infidelity that happened. And so my mom, even before that, was very jealous of women and the way they related to my dad. And then when I think about, like, my relationship with women, with girls, like, at that age when my parents were getting divorced, was, like, I had more boyfriends, and I was more friends with boys and had more trust in that relationship than I did with women. And I almost became, like, that girl my mom hated in a way, because mm-hmm. I was, like, always the jealous, like, I would make other
yeah.
people jealous because I had such a close relationship with boys. And I'm like, so that's what's coming up right now. And,
yeah.
and it's just, like, really interesting.
Yeah.
It kind of fucked up.
Yeah. I'm so glad it's coming to the surface. And it's such a good, like, important well, first of all, I think it's important for you, not just for your work with women, but just for yourself, you know, to continue with this, and we'll have more opportunity. And also, it's such a good illustration of why we put things into shadow, right? So when we're little, when we see a parent act a particular way, we make a decision about ourselves in reaction to that. And it's almost like a sacred contract of I will never be that, right? Whatever that thing that we've decided is not going to work for us or be good for us or is bad or wrong. You know, in a situation like yours, you may have made a sacred contract to never be like that woman with all the male friends, or you may have made a sacred contract to never be like your mother so that you don't get hurt in that way or whatever it is. But we decide definitively that there's something that we are not, and then go from there. We put that thing into shadow. So it feels like there's stuff here that's really ripe for you. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, I'll take one more share for now. Who is this? 4217 are your last numbers.
It's Rose, Joanna.
Hi, Rose. Talk a little bit louder. It's a little hard to hear you.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay, so I'm the youngest of six. The sister above me, her name is Deborah. I often refer to us, she was the princess and I was the rebel. And my sister passed in 2010 through a very deep experience with breast cancer. But what I learned from my parents was, you're not the one. That was the constant message. You are not the one. And even after my sister's death, and even to this day in the community I grew up in, I'm not the one.
I got chills as you said that, Rose. I could feel how deeply this is embedded inside of you. And so much of many of these beliefs and feelings, you know, we often refer to the sister wound, and it's that wounding, you know, whether we have sisters or not, but the wounding of, you know, that comes from the relationship of, or the comparison between sisters or girlfriends or whatever it is. And I can feel that this is a big one for you. And my guess is because I know you know yourself so well, that it's coming up now because you're ready to transform the next layer of it. It's really ripe for you. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I'm ready. I find it so interesting about this sacred contract.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to uncovering what I've contracted into because of this experience.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, good. I know a lot is coming up. Like I said in the beginning, this is about stirring the cauldron. Let's keep on going. So, well, let me ask you guys this question now, actually. I think this would be a good moment since it's come up. As I describe this idea of the sacred contract, and you may or may not have clarity on this yet, but let's see. Take a moment. What was the sacred contract around all of this that you maybe made when you were younger? What did you decide that you were not when you were younger? Again, may or may not be clear yet, but let's see if something wants to come through and up with that. One of my sacred contracts, some of you know this story. When my mother was pregnant with me, she had a miscarriage in her second trimester. She didn't know that she was pregnant with twins, but it turns out that I was a twin, and the twin miscarried. And because of the ways that, I'm sure because of the energetic experience itself, but also because of my mother's inability to handle that situation and process her feelings around it, I developed this deep, deep belief that if I were to be bigger and stronger and in my fullest power, in a way, that others would perish, literally. There would not be enough space if I took up space. And so a sacred contract that I made at a young age was to not be too big, to not get too big, to not shine too much, to not be in my power. Because for me, that was just the worst thing that I could be. I just stuffed my impulse to be big into shadow. I pretended like it wasn't there. I made that sacred contract. So lean in for yourself. What is it for you? You may or may not. It may or may not be ready to be revealed yet. That's okay. Okay, let's take this a step further. Not in all cases, but in many cases, the envier and the envied, the one who is envied, are really just different sides of the same coin. The Cinderella story illustrates it. We'll get there soon, I promise. But I want to share a personal story to illustrate this, that the envier and the envied can really be just different sides of the same coin. So a number of months ago, someone who has been a student in pretty much all of my trainings over the last years, I was scrolling through Facebook one day, and I saw she had videos from a recent retreat that she led. I saw, number one, that she was training practitioners in the exact ways that I do. And I saw in her videos that she was using my material word for word. And as I saw it, I knew that there was no way that on some level she didn't know that she had stolen this from me. I mean, it was word for word writing and questions, same exact topics. And also because me and her, you know, we had been in pretty close contact, but she had never told me that she was pivoting from being a website, doing website branding to leading practitioner training. So I knew that on some level, you know, she knew that there was something wrong with what she was doing. I don't believe that the stealing came from a place of being evil, right, or wanting to hurt me, because really, for the most part, there's no such thing as being evil. I believe that it came from a place of jealousy, a place of not feeling that her own material was maybe good enough, and maybe just feeling like she had desperately had to take something that wasn't hers, and justifying that it was okay in one way or another, or that she really wasn't taking it. Now, when I discovered that she was using so much of my material, you'd think that my first response would maybe be to get angry, right? Anger would actually be a very healthy response in a situation like this. The core, anger in its highest expression leads to setting boundaries, right? And I was angry, that much is true, but right behind the anger came a number of other feelings and experiences for me that were actually way stronger than the anger I was experiencing. And these other feelings really impacted me quite negatively. So for one thing, even though this woman had stolen from me, I noticed that I felt jealous of her when I saw her stuff. I went into a fear that people would be more attracted to her version of the programming than to mine. I went into an irrational fear that I would lose my business because her stuff was sexier, you know, in a lot of ways. And when I say sexy, I mean, for those of you that know me, you know I don't do a lot of sexy marketing. I really tell it like it is. And honestly, there was a part of me that was scared that maybe her version of my material was actually better than my material. Momentarily, I really thought for sure my business would fall apart. In this one act of someone stealing from me, I was slammed straight into my old stories of not enoughness and scarcity, just like Renee was mentioning before. But that wasn't all. That evening, the evening that I had discovered what this woman had done, every time I thought about reaching out to her to let her know that, you know, it wasn't okay, I would feel terrible about myself and judge myself harshly. I felt badly that I needed to set this boundary. Like, I felt there was something wrong with me that I needed to set this boundary. I told myself that I needed too much power, that, you know, even though she had signed a contract, that it wasn't my place to ask her not to use this. I told myself that I was power hungry, even monstrous, or a bad teacher for wanting her to not use my stuff. And I told myself that I should just be happy with what I have and to just lay low and let myself be small and let her be big. Now, thank goodness I've done a lot of work around power, empowerment, and disempowerment over the years, because within, you know, a couple of hours, I was able to notice the patterns pretty quickly and transcend them to be able to reach out to her. This wasn't the first time that something like this had happened to me, and in the past, I stewed and obsessed for months and months and months, sometimes without any resolution and causing myself so much pain. Now, hopefully, you can see in this story that the deeper dynamics felt by the envier, this woman, and the envied, me, were actually not so different. Whether you're the envier or the envied, not always, but often, what's common between both is a sense of disempowerment. Even if the envier feels momentarily like having a lot of power because maybe they've gone to an extreme of stealing or speaking badly or stabbing someone in the back. When you're the envier, underneath it all, you're disempowered because you feel you're not good enough, because you think you don't have gifts or you can't see them, because you think what others have is better than what you have maybe, because on some level you feel incomplete without having what the other has. Maybe you feel that someone else has the power that you don't, or maybe you feel that there's only so much of it to go around. When you're the envied, now again, not always, but if you're hooked into the shadow dance with the envier, you also feel disempowered. You maybe feel disempowered because it feels like the envier or the jealous one took your power away from you. Or you maybe feel disempowered because you feel you need to shrink in order to be accepted or loved or seen as good or simply to keep the peace. Or put another way, you feel like you can't fully shine bright in your power because it might hurt someone else or you. In any event, in one way or another, it's as if there isn't enough power to go around. So when we feel disempowered, we can easily run to the extreme of the envier or to the extreme of if anybody envies me, I can't do anything about it. It's wrong of me to feel a reaction to this. The healthy place, you know, so it's almost like power over and power under are at those extremes in a way. The healthy place is empowerment. And that's really the ultimate gift and superpower that's embedded in the core of jealousy, is to not feel power over or power under, but empowered inside of yourself. So first just sit with this for a moment, just take it in and try it on. What's coming up for you around this so far? Write down some notes. What are you seeing for yourself so far? And let's take this a little further. What have you been taught about disempowerment or power over? So power over or power under from your parents? What have you been taught about either disempowerment or too much power from your parents? or parental figures. Next question. What have you been taught about disempowerment or too much power from culture in general and from any type of culture that you come from? What have you been taught about disempowerment or too much power from culture in general, or from any type of culture or community that you come from? Next question. Think about your lineage. What in your lineage, you may have already gotten into this from the last question, but what in your lineage relates to power over or to not having power, to disempowerment? What do you take from your lineage? So let me give you some examples. So for example, I am Jewish, and the Holocaust is in my lineage, and a lot of persecution is in my lineage, and so there is a lot of baggage that I came into the world with when it comes to feeling disempowered, right? Another example for those of us that are women, right? Just simply being a woman, have you noticed that in culture and in media, it's way more often the case that a woman is characterized as jealous than a man is? That's not just chance. It's not because women are more inherently prone to be jealous than other people are. It's because of the patriarchy, because women have less power in patriarchal structures than men. There's a less amount of perceived power to go around within a patriarchal framework. So again, for you, what's in your lineage? What are you carrying in your lineage when it comes to power over or power under? There might be power over in your lineage. If you were or are part of a people that have done the persecution. And then one last question for now. For you, what is the connection between jealousy that you've experienced or felt from others and your own sense of power? What's the connection between jealousy for you, however you've experienced it, and your own sense of power? or disempowerment. Okay, I promise in a few minutes we're going to get to the Cinderella story and work with it deeply. But first, I'd like to pause here for another moment or two and hear from one or two of you what's coming up around this discussion of power for you. Don't feel shy. Raise your hand. Start to... Who'd like to share what's coming up for you? Christine.
Hi. It's interesting. I'm finding it very interesting that this piece on power, so the first bits I was okay with and I could connect and, you know, the bit about dimming my light or, you know, talking behind people's back. I mean, I do that even today. It's terrible. But so that I could deal with. But the power is making me very uncomfortable, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah. So sit with it. Thank you for raising your hand on this and for, you know, I know you're not the only one. So just, if you're willing, lean into the discomfort, Christine, around around power.
Yeah.
What are you seeing? Why is it making you uncomfortable?
It's funny. I'm getting some sort of headache. It's scary, I think. I think that's what it's about. It's very frightening. I think the responsibility that comes with it.
Yes.
And actually, now that you say yes, and the one thing that kept coming up for me in the other sessions was, I will never make it. I will never make it. That's the statement that goes through. I'll never make it. I'll never make it. I'll never make it. So I guess with the power, that's the discomfort. You know, if I do take it on, I'll never make it. But I guess I put it in the shadow. So there's jealousy around women who are able to take it, who are courageous enough to walk with it.
I hear that, and I feel like I could be getting this wrong, Christine, but before you went into the I'll never make it, I feel like I heard something else coming up that you kind of pushed away. Now, I could be getting this wrong, so you let me know, but I was feeling that what was coming up for you as you were talking is that power is a big responsibility, and that it's so easy for it to be misused.
Yes, very much so.
And used as power against.
Yes.
And I'm going to take a guess that at some point in your life, in one way or another, somebody misused power with you.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you made a sacred contract to not be as powerful as you could be, because it could be dangerous.
Yeah, that certainly resonates. I'm also even in my recent past, I mean, even now, I think I'm in a situation where, you know, someone misuses power around me, and I can see it, and around other people, and I can see it. And I think, Joanna, that's shifted. I feel it more than I
hear. Some of this is not, like, intellectual. It's hard for us to grit it with our minds, but, yeah, I can feel that you're feeling it. Good.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Good. I'll take a couple more shares. Leah.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Cool. So I'm kind of seeing an interesting cycle. And it's a cycle of basically what I've learned is it's better to be on top, bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of seeing like my scrambling, like both the subtle but the like socially sanctioned ways to basically to be a high achiever, right? To stand out, to be successful and be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm also seeing like two other interesting things that are kind of counter to that. So one is that better to be on top is what I think I learned from my dad more than my mom.
Yep.
And then from my mom, I learned like basically you are successful if you're lucky or something, like you're like rich people are lucky or something like that. Or they just got lucky. So it feels like my success isn't in my control or like I could do everything and it still won't even matter.
Yes. Yeah, there's two beliefs,
but I also,
the one from your dad and the one from your mom can hook into each other in even more insidious ways.
Yeah, and then that the like there's something about like putting luck in shadow or like putting like or I'm gonna be a hard worker, but then it's also in a way self sabotaging because it's so there's something messy as fuck there. And then there's something else around my personal experience, which was like I've been fired multiple times for standing out and being in my power.
Yeah.
And so then it's also equally not safe at the top. And so one of the things that came through in the last question is just like jealous people come for powerful people. So this is definitely like an entangled web.
Yeah. But I'm glad I feel like you're starting to see more what's happening inside of you. It's like this bopping back and forth, right? Between I need to be on top and I'm going to try to be on top, but it's actually luck that I'm on top. But if I get on top, then other people are going to take me down. And, you know, there are a lot of threads here, but my sense is you're starting to see how these dynamics are functioning inside of you. Good.
Looking forward to untangling.
Like I said at the beginning, this is a process, you know, it's not a once and done. Really good work, because there's a lot there. Thank you for sharing. All right, who is this from? Vermont, 0992. Are you there from Vermont? 0992. All right, I'll come back to you. Magdalena, Ireland.
Yes. Hello. Can you hear me, Joanna?
I can. Yes. Hi.
Oh, it's so great to be here. I just love how you do it. I mean, the questions really take me deep. And even though I knew intellectually before, it just, I realized today even deeper that I don't trust women.
Yeah.
That I think that they just pretend. They're not authentic.
Yeah.
Because what I saw from my mom, she would be nice to somebody and then she would talk behind her back. Using really, like really nasty comments about somebody from the family or a woman. Like now I can see why, because they were maybe more successful or they had things, you know, together and the families were nice and all of this. But I've never heard my dad speaking about somebody else. So in my childish mind, I just thought, okay, so women are just like this.
Yes.
And men are trustworthy.
Without realizing that it was actually coming from your mother's jealousy, which was actually coming probably from her not enoughness.
Yes. And oh my God, like I have massive goosebumps right now because like she felt disempowered all her life.
Yeah.
So it was coming from such a big wound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're able to see that and really take this in more deeply. Beautiful.
And that just because she was like this, it does not mean that all women are like this.
No. No, and it doesn't mean that you have to be either. And really looking at this so clearly in the way that you are right now, even though it is so hard to be honest with ourselves about these things, so courageous, you're breaking that cycle simply by doing this.
Yeah.
Really beautifully done. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. These shares are so beautiful, and I can feel so important for all of us. I'm going to take one, maybe two more for now, just because we still have a lot of work to do today. But we'll continue to have time for shares and for hand raising. Nicole.
Hello.
Hey.
What seems to be coming up for me is that whether I'm on the feeling of jealousy or on the receiving of jealousy, my response to that is disempowerment and diminishment.
Mm-hmm.
That I have engendered a lot of jealousy throughout my life. I have a very evocative aura, and you love me or you hate me. And most of that shade in my life has come from girls. I've learned not to excel, not to stand out, not to make noise, not to be seen, because every time I did these things, I was hurt.
Yes.
And no matter, even if I feel that someone is doing better than me, and I do feel that jealousy within me, it's inexorably linked with rejection.
Yes.
If I feel jealous, I'm going to be rejected. If someone is jealous of me, I'm going to be rejected. And it all leads back to abandonment and anxiety.
Yeah.
Getting kicked out of the herd and death.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that it was literally a life and death issue for me. And that, it explains so much of the extreme reactions and the wanting to not even acknowledge that I felt jealousy.
Yes.
And I've worked with a lot through the years because of this. And I also identify as polyamorous, so I very much learn how to share. Mm-hmm. I'm also an only child, so I felt that sharing was something that I had to do in order to earn friendship, mm-hmm. to earn companionship.
Yeah.
And again, that's a way of diminishing myself and saying it's not okay for me to have what I have.
I don't get to have, right? I don't get to have more. I don't get to
have. I don't get to have more. I don't get to be more. I don't get to shine.
So, yeah, I'm so glad all of this is coming through, Nicole. And what I just want to point out is that it's been a survival, like literally life or death, it's been a survival mechanism for you up until right now, up until today. But because you see it now, you now have agency to tell the little girl inside of you who thinks that she will die if she lets herself shine, that that's actually not true. That doesn't have to be your survival mechanism anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, huge. So glad. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, women, there's so much here, and I do want to take more shares, but I want to bring us into Cinderella. So I'm going to lower hands for right now, but there's going to be more opportunities, I promise you. All right, so I think we're ready to go deeper now into the story of Cinderella. And all of you probably know this already, but I will just share that stories are important. Fairy tales often hold archetypal codes inside of them. They hold energy inside of them that we all have access to, that we all, these energies, we all have all of them inside of us. And when we work with these stories in conscious ways, we can deconstruct them so that we can have more access to these energies and use them for good. And the Cinderella story is one that I think probably, you know, I'm assuming this, but I think I'm probably right, one that, like, most little girls know about. And probably a lot of little girls fantasize about being Cinderella. But there's actually more to Cinderella than meets the eye. It's one that, of course, has been co-opted by Disney. But the original Grimm Brothers story reveals a lot. And just like any good archetypal code and story, we're meant to resonate not only with the heroine. We're actually meant to resonate with all of the characters, to find each one of them inside of us, to lean into what each one has to teach us and present for us. And for those of us that are feminists, we don't have to see the Cinderella story as the woman who was finally saved by the prince. Again, just like any archetypal story, the prince is an energy. Perhaps he's the energy of the masculine, or the energy of royalty, or the energy of agency. Let's listen and see what each of the characters mean personally to us. So I've kind of taken the Disney version and the Grimm Brothers version and added some of my own poetic license to the story. So don't get caught up if some of the details sound a little bit different than how you know them. I invite you, as I tell this story, to open your ears, to be childlike and curious, to listen for what's important to you. Once upon a time, there was a beautiful, intelligent, radiant little girl who lived on a farm connected to nature and the earth. Her warm and generous father adored his little girl, and he was a wealthy merchant who took good care of his family. The little girl's mother was incredibly loving to her little girl, nearly really perfect in all ways. Everything that a little girl would fantasize for in a perfect mother. So in many ways, this little girl was actually quite abundant to begin with. She was empowered. She had a lot. And she was supported by the masculine, her father, and the feminine, her mother. Except her mother died when she was quite young, right around the age when little girls realize that there is no such thing as a perfect mother. Right around the age when that magical thinking that our mothers can be loving and supportive in all possible ways gets proven to be wrong. As her mother dies, she makes Cinderella promise her to always be good, always be pious. It's a spoken or unspoken expectation so many mothers have of their daughters, to be good and pious. Perhaps an unconscious hope that if their daughter is good, it will prove that they, too, are good. And thus, the young maiden makes a sacred contract to her dying mother, to her model of perfect womanhood, that she will never be anything but good. In some ways, it's an impossible promise, unless you're going to deny all the parts inside of you. Her father eventually remarries another woman, a widower with two daughters of her own. And when her father died soon after that, in a way, it was as if the masculine abandoned Cinderella. Her stepmother cruelly forced Cinderella from her birthright of abundance and empowerment to a life of servitude. Though she lived in her own home, the sweet and nourishing home she had grown up in, the home that was her birthright, Cinderella became disconnected from it. Instead of being able to claim what was hers, as it was truly right in front of her, Cinderella suffered as her stepmother and stepsisters took the house over and forced her to labor for mere bits of food and shelter. They took the maiden's beautiful clothing and replaced it with a gray smock. They took her beautiful shoes and replaced them with wooden ones. Remembering the sacred promise she made to her mother to always be good, to always be pious, Cinderella felt it was wrong to stand up for herself. She felt that to be good meant to be the lowly handmaid, to dim her radiance so that she wouldn't upset the stepmother and the stepsisters. And perhaps the more pious she was, the more of a good girl she was, the more that she dimmed her light, the more she became separate from her power, her brilliance, her abundance, her birthright. Cinderella was disconnected from the abundance and empowerment that had been innately hers. She came to be known as Cinderella because she had no bed, and so she slept at night by the hearth in the ashes, by the cinders, always looking dusty and dirty from it. The cinders, of course, are the remnants of flames, of nourishing fires of passion, of fires of empowerment that have burnt out. The stepmother and the stepsisters were cruel to Cinderella. They had Cinderella wait on them hand and foot, and Cinderella barely had time to tend to herself, to her own needs, to her own heart and soul. Instead, Cinderella spent her precious energy catering to the stepmother and the stepsisters, feeding them, tending to them. And not only that, the stepmother and stepsisters were mean to Cinderella, insulting her, criticizing her, telling her she was ugly and unremarkable and a nobody and a nothing. You see, even though it is said that the stepmother and the stepsisters were incredibly beautiful, and clever, and rich in their own right, they could never see it in themselves. Like Cinderella, they simply did not have access to the abundance and riches that were their birthright. Blinded to the truth and the wonder of who they really were. And so, in this blindness, they were incredibly jealous of Cinderella, of her beauty, of her brilliance, of her abundance, and that jealousy caused them to want to take that power away from the maiden, to make her suffer. Somehow, the stepmother and stepsisters felt that if Cinderella had more, they had less. And that if Cinderella had less, they would have more. There was only so much beauty, so much brilliance, so much comfort and abundance to go around. So, when the prince announced that he was looking for someone to marry, looking for a queen, the stepmother didn't allow Cinderella to go to the ball, saying, "You're not coming with us. You have no good clothes. You have no shoes. You are clearly not good enough. Everyone would laugh at you, and we would be ashamed of you." And so the stepmother and stepsisters left for the ball, and Cinderella was left at home, held back by the stepmother's not enoughness, squelched, unseen, with no place at the ball, upset because she deeply desired to go to the ball, to be seen, to not be hidden under the cinders at home, to have a chance. It was perhaps the first time since the stepmother took over that Cinderella actually allowed herself to connect to her deepest desires. To not be so good and listen and do as she was told, but instead to feel the flames in her heart. And with that, with the acknowledgement of the desires in her heart and what she knew to be true, which was that she was so beautiful and so magnificent and so deserving and so royal, and that she had a fighting chance if the prince were to meet her, with all of that acknowledgement, a third type of mother enters this tale. A fairy godmother appears. This mother loved Cinderella and believed in her. This mother didn't ask her to be pious. This mother wanted Cinderella to compete at the ball. For her heart's desire. This mother wanted for Cinderella to be her true self in her highest expression of who she was. This mother reflected all of that love and support straight to the maiden. We all know what happens next. The pumpkin turns into a carriage, the mice into horses, an incredible dress and glass slippers. And off to the ball our maiden goes. All at once, Cinderella knows that she isn't the lowly handmaid, that she is in fact incredible and magnificent and has power, and yet at the same time, she's not 100% sure of herself, because that clock would eventually strike midnight. Haven't we all gone to a proverbial ball where we feel so incredible about ourselves and yet unsure if that incredibleness is truly us, if it's actually true? She goes to the ball because she's in her power. The stepmother and stepsisters don't even recognize her. She slips their gaze. She slips the gaze of that which would have been hidden and hidden her. And is able to stay at the ball, to compete in the ball. Cinderella connects with the prince, with this royal, powerful, masculine energy, and she connects as his equal. They dance and dance and dance, the empowered feminine and the empowered masculine dancing together, coming together in a swirl of magic. And then the clock strikes midnight. Our maiden runs to get into her pumpkin coach and go home, and by mistake, or maybe not, leaves a glass slipper behind, a relic of her magnificence and the promise of who she really is meant to be. When the prince finally gets to Cinderella's home with the glass slipper, the stepmother instructs her stepdaughters to try on the slipper and actually to cut off bits of their feet, toes on one sister, heels on the other sister, so that they could fit into the slipper. The stepsisters took their beautiful feet, their feet that were perfect for them, and painfully altered their own unique feet to fit someone else's slipper, to steal someone else's opportunity. While they were able to get into the slipper, it was clear from the blood that the slipper wasn't theirs. And from then on, they would never be able to fit into slippers that were made for their beautiful feet. Cinderella was the last one to try on the glass slipper. And of course it fit, as it was truly hers. Though the stepmother had tried to keep her hidden, who Cinderella really was came shining through. She didn't have to hide anymore. And through the claiming of her power, she soon thereafter became a queen. So, let's take this even a step deeper. As I said earlier, each character in the story is also a character inside of ourselves, an energy inside of ourselves. Characters that aren't meant to be hated, though we often might, but instead to be understood, to be unburdened. They're there for us to unearth the wisdom that they hold inside. And so let's do a little work with some of these characters. We're going to be doing some writing. You can think of it as just writing from the point of view from the character, or channeling the voice and the energy of the character as it lives inside of you, as it lives inside of you. And so let's start with the stepmother. And what we're going to do is when I say go, you'll just start with, I am the stepmother. You'll write that down, I am the stepmother, and then write from the stepmother's point of view, from the stepmother's energy. What is it that the stepmother has to, what is it that the stepmother has to say? And my invitation to you is to just write as fast as you can. Don't think. Just let whatever words want to come through. What does this stepmother have to say? And just write and write and write, and I'll let you know when it's time to stop. So let's start. I am the stepmother. Start with that prompt, and let's see what else the stepmother what the stepmother wants to say. Go ahead. Keep on going a little bit longer. I am the stepmother. take a few more moments. Keep on going. See if anything else is there for now. And then bring that writing to a close. Now let's, you can shake out your hand. We're going to be doing a little bit of writing. Next, let's lean in and connect in to the voice of the stepsister. What does the stepsister's voice have to say? What does it want to reveal? So start with, I am the stepsister. And then start writing, see what she has to say, and I'll let you know how long to go. I am the stepsister. Keep on going. What else does the stepsister have to say as she lives inside of you? And take another few moments with the voice of the stepsister. And then bring that writing to a close. We're going to do two more of these, so stretch your hands. Okay. Next. Energy, archetypal energy that we're going to explore and lean into is the glass slipper. Glass slipper has something to say too. So you can start with, I am the glass slipper. And let's see what the slipper has to say. I am the glass slipper. And again, don't think too much. We'll have time for analysis later. Just start writing. Write as fast as you can. Don't edit yourself. Just see what wants to come through. I'm the glass slipper. on going a little bit longer. Keep on asking the glass slipper what it wants to say. And then start to bring that to a close for now, finishing up. And then last one for now, let's see what Cinderella has to say. So take a moment, really connect in with the energy of Cinderella. And, well, let me say it this way, of the lowly handmaiden. Connect in with her energy. And let's see what she has to say. I am Cinderella. Keep on going. What does Cinderella have to say? And take about another half a minute and start to bring that to a close. And then bring the writing to a close for now. And I want to give you a minute or two to read over everything that you just wrote from the four different energies. Use your, practitioner lens, your coaching lens, whatever it is for you. You read through and find, there's so much in it. I don't want to tie anything up in a neat bow, but let the energy be the energy of it, but see what patterns you can find, what connections you can make, what are some of the golden nuggets that are coming through and the ahas that are coming through for you, or things that you already knew that you're taking in an even deeper way now. So take a minute or two and read through. I'll give you another half minute with this. Okay. In a few minutes, we'll open up for some shares again, because I'm sure a lot is coming through. But before we do, I want to take this one step further first. So, and you may have already started to see this, but each of these parts that we've been working with can relate to, we can see them through the lens of who we are in relation to somebody outside of us, right? So, for example, we're the stepmother maybe when we're jealous of somebody else. Or maybe we're Cinderella when somebody else takes something from us. But these different energies and characters and parts can also be seen through the lens of different parts inside of ourselves that communicate with and interact with each other. So these different parts not only are communicating with and acting with people outside of ourselves, but they have a relationship to each other inside of us. So we each have an inner stepmother who holds back our inner Cinderella from going to the ball. Or perhaps our inner Cinderella, and perhaps our inner Cinderella wants to go to the ball metaphorically by raising your rates. Or maybe the metaphoric ball is starting a podcast, or maybe it's online dating. Or perhaps the inner stepmother tells our inner Cinderella that we're not good enough to raise our rate or start a podcast or be successful at online dating. Perhaps the inner stepmother takes actions to hold back our inner sabotaging actions to hold back our inner Cinderella from doing these things, right? Perhaps our inner stepmother keeps our inner Cinderella locked away inside with the cinders. So considering that, what are the metaphoric balls that your inner stepmother keeps your inner Cinderella from going to? What are the metaphoric balls that your inner stepmother keeps your inner Cinderella from going to? This probably already came up, but I'll just ask it anyway, just in case. How does your inner stepmother persecute your inner Cinderella? How does your inner stepmother persecute or squelch your inner Cinderella? How has she left her with the cinders at home, metaphorically? And who is your inner stepmother modeled after? Who have you modeled her after in your life? Or from the experiences in your life? How does your inner Cinderella respond to or react to your inner stepmother? How does your inner Cinderella react or respond when the inner stepmother persecutes her? And let me ask you this question. How can your inner stepmother be used in better, more nourishing ways? So let's say that your inner stepmother actually could be harnessed for good inside of you. She probably has a lot of strengths that can be harnessed to help you. So how can you actually use her energy in a better, more nourishing way? How can you actually leverage her energy for you? Like, I know, as an example for me, my inner stepmother is very judgmental. The superpower in her judgmentalness is that she's incredibly discerning, you know? When she runs amok, she judges me harshly. But when I leverage her, I'm incredibly discerning. So how can your inner stepmother be used? What are her strengths and her superpowers? How can you leverage her? Use her for good. Okay, so I do want to acknowledge that we're moving through this quite quickly. Oh, we still have quite a lot more to look at, but I want to acknowledge that we're moving through it quickly, and we will pause right now for some processing and sharing. You know, when I work in more intimate groups, obviously we have a lot more time for processing and sharing and coaching and all of that, but I'm trusting you're getting what you need, even as we move through quickly. So let's pause here, and I'd love to hear, through the story, what came through you as you were listening to the story, what came through in the writing, what came through, you know, just through all that we've been looking at with the Cinderella story, what's being revealed to you. What's feeling really important and potent to you so far? Inval.
Hi, Joanna. So there were some interesting themes. And one was that, like, there's only one option,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the glass slipper, that was a fun one because it was like, everyone's trying to fit me as if I'm the only option around. Beautiful and specially and special, but I'm only one person size. I'm unique.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it was like, it's so hard to watch these girls harm themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was also like the, there were two other, one is kind of like this acceptance of this empowerment as if it's for some greater good.
That
this is shitty, but it's like the right way to be. Or, you know,
disempowerment for the greater good. Yeah. I thought you said
empowerment.
Yes. Yeah. No. Now I get it. Yeah. Like, okay, I'm disempowered, but this is for the greater good. So let me just suffer through this because this is how it has to be.
Right. Like, I'm Cinderella. I'm helpless. I don't have other options. I'm going to stay here and do my best. It's what my parents would have wanted. And then the last thing, which is just so like true in my life and how I was raised, not with sisters, but like, you know, with my first brother, is that it came out in both the stepmother and the stepsister that like how annoyed I am with like goodness or piousness. Like, it's so annoying that she's so good and pious and she's so hard to be around. And, you know, and in my family story, like, I was the, like, the bad or the wild one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's super interesting.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, there's so much in what you just shared, but it feels like there may be a connection between being the bad one and the, well, I just have to accept disempowerment for the greater good. I don't know if that lands or not, but I'll just toss that to you. There may be a connection there.
Cool. Yeah, I'll feel into that.
Yeah. Good.
Thank you.
Amelia. You there, Amelia? Hello? All right, I'll come back to you.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, there you are. Yay.
I pressed the wrong one. Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
It was really interesting. All the voices were pretty empowered. And so the first couple questions were kind of like, oh, well, the stepmom isn't persecuting Cinderella anymore, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we got to the question of how does Cinderella react to the stepmom, and then how can the stepmom be used in better, more nourishing ways, that's where I was able to kind of make a connection, because I realized that even though the Cinderella voice was empowered, she was also, like, disconnected from the stepmother. I've got this, like, I'm a badass, and I she was basically saying things like, oh, they think they got one over on me, but I'm just playing their game, like, honestly, I know the truth, or whatever. But then when it was like, how does she react to the stepmom, that's when I was like, oh, like, she's still hurt. And
why is that important for you, Amelia? What are you seeing in your life, like practically in your life?
It's like the empowerment, or like, I don't know if it's a faux feeling of empowerment, but this version of empowerment, whatever it is at the expense of connection with other women.
Yes. Yeah.
And
I know you are so empowered. It is true. And what I am really hearing is coming forward is that there's actually opportunity for even deeper empowerment of yourself, as well as through you, deeper empowerment of other women. Like, that's what's next for you here.
Yeah, because, like, when it, the question, like, how can a stepmother be used in better, more nourishing ways? It was, like, coach and mentor Cinderella, but, like, also, like, because that's what Cinderella actually wants. But she's like, oh, because the stepmother was like, oh, I made mistakes, but now I'm better. And then Cinderella's like, well, I'm glad you realized it, but, like, you still never apologized to me, or, like, you still never, like, you're still not connected to me kind of thing. So it's like, yeah.
So, Amelia, I could be getting this wrong and reading too much in, but I think the other thing I'm hearing and what you're saying is that is there a deeper forgiveness of others for betrayals that you are ready to step into?
Willing to be ready to step into, maybe, but, like,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's hitting ahead there.
Yeah, like Cinderella's still salty is basically.
Yeah, I got it, but I would still write that down, right? Because I think that's the other piece here is, like, maybe there's some forgivenesses that have been made on the surface, but it actually will serve you and support you to make deeper connections in some way.
Deeper forgiveness and deeper connections. And then deeper empowerment.
Well, you tell me, yeah?
I think I have to sit with it.
Yeah. Good. Here are a few more. Michelle.
So I found, when you asked us the questions, I'm like, oh, here we go. It's all the same old with me, right? For the stepmother, it was, I never get what I want. I'm not enough. For the stepsister. And for Cinderella, it's like overworking. I think there's a place where I see, like, working really, really hard is a virtue, but it actually doesn't tell me the truth about myself. And I saw this last slipper is like what's actually true about whoever puts it on, but you know, there's truth about myself that I'm unwilling to own up to, and that makes all of this much harder.
Say that last part again.
That there are truths about myself that I'm unwilling to own up to, that makes everything so much harder.
Yeah. So it's like same old thing. So this is my experience in my own inner work. You can tell me this may or may not land for you, but whenever I'm like, ugh, that again, same old, it's actually like a self-sabotage mechanism from seeing what else is embedded in there. Like, I already know that. Ugh, same broken record. Let's move on, right? But what I hear...
Well, I know it's not, let's move on. It's like, I know that there's. It's like, you're not finished. It's more what it is.
Okay, good. Because what I was going to say is I heard, like, even though the same old, you actually were able to open up to see some deeper pieces and to see some deeper truths that you haven't really been allowing yourself. Maybe you've known intellectually, because I know you're a smarty pants, but I hear and feel you, like, seeing them and feeling them more deeply.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad. Because that, taking those deeper, like, really seeing, it's going to lead to the next pieces for you.
Whew, okay.
Beautiful. Good work. Thank you. Take one or two more. Gail. Is this Gail? Maybe not. 1762.
Hello?
Hi. Who is that?
Yes, hi. It's Esther.
Hi,
it's
Esther.
Hi. It's so fascinating how everybody gets something different from the story, and it's like a mirror and reflects right back what we're actually working with. Yeah. So what came up for me was with Cinderella that, first of all, the stepmother actually had had a really hard life, and the only way she knew to be provided for is having a man.
Mm.
And Cinderella wasn't actually that nice. She had a little bit of a sassy and a little bit of a bitchy side, but she had a lot of self-awareness and introspection. She wasn't that much prettier than the other girls, but she was smart, and she knew it would be a waste of her time to busy herself with wasting time on what she didn't have. And going after what she wanted, and she had a greater sense of abundance, and there was something about herself being more integrated with her inner masculine. So she had a greater access then to that completion, to be seen by the prince as, as somebody that is whole and his equal.
Yeah, beautiful. Absolutely. And, yes. And so how does that relate to what you need for yourself right now?
It's actually exactly what I'm working on right now. It was interesting because recently I was in a session with somebody where it was revealed that my father had a lot of jealousy toward me, which was really unsettling for me. And in the story, the stepmother is my father, who is extremely critical. And when you said, first I was very closed off to the idea, what does she offer? And when you said discernment, I said, well, wait a minute. There are areas in my life, or there are things I can lovingly call myself out and improving and stepping up for myself. Not from a I'm not enough place, but from a, self-assessment sort of, you know what, I'm cutting myself short here, and I can show up more fully for myself in that area.
I love it. Beautiful. Yeah, really nicely done. And there may also, because you see the wicked step, mother, as your father, there may be some work to be done in dialogue between the stepmother and the prince, since it's two different masculine type energies that are coming up for you. I think there may be some work in there too. Good.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, beautiful. All right. I'm going to keep on going. We still have a little bit more, and I promise we'll have more shares, and we'll have a lot of time at the end, but there's like some clincher pieces here that I want to make sure we get to. So for now, I'm going to lower hands. Okay. So, like I said earlier, we're not tying any neat bows of completion here. We're stirring the pot so different threads can come up and through. And the next kind of thread that I want to pull in for us is about competition. So, many of us, in one way or another, have been taught that competition, competing with others, is bad. And especially women, they're taught not to compete. You know, competing is not a good thing. Not always, but by and large. And so what happens, you know, we've been talking a bit about shadow today, right? So what happens is that when we're taught that something is bad, right, like competition, we make a sacred contract to not be that, to not be competitive. And in one way or another, we put our competitive selves into shadow. Maybe in one way or another, we decide that being competitive is something to be ashamed of. And when we put this natural, normal impulse inside of us to be competitive, when we decide it's not good, we're not going to be it, it's not right, and we put it into the shadows, that's where it stews and turns into jealousy or into dimming your own light and letting others take over, right? If you have an impulse to be competitive and you squelch that impulse, it's either going to come out as dimming yourself and making yourself smaller, or it's going to come out in raging competition in a not healthy way, or it's going to come out as bopping back and forth between the two, like raging competition and then, you know, slamming yourself down to feeling bad about yourself and dimming your light, and then building up to like out of control competition again and then slamming yourself down, right? But as I said, competition is actually a natural, normal, archetypal energy. If we hold it in healthy ways. If we hold competition in healthy ways as we see it, if we see it as healthy and sometimes necessary, then so much good can come of it, right? And we can see this in little pockets of culture, right? So in sports is one of the arenas where competition is accepted. And competition in the sports arena, you know, when it's healthy, is like each team wants to be the best, wants to win. They're competitive, and it's like each team is propelling the other teams forward. Can I do better? Can I do better? Right? Again, not when it gets overly crazy or, you know, whatever it is, but in its healthiest form. Debate competitions in high school and college, right? Like any places where we actually have competitions, if it's approached in a healthy way, it actually is a vehicle and a mechanism for greater empowerment for everybody involved. We see this in nature, right, with animals too. There are animals that are competitive with each other, you know, for whatever it is in the tribe. And we saw this in the Cinderella story. Cinderella's desire to go to the ball in part was an impulse to competition, right? So the more that we can bring any impulses to compete with others, to be better, right? I will just go ahead and say it, to be better, right? It doesn't, again, when it's put in shadows, the impulse to be better means that we want others to be worse, right? Or crazy use of power, whatever it is. But in a healthy way, it can actually be used for advancement, you know, and for things to get better and better. It can actually be a paradigm for leadership and for deeper collaboration, relationship, and connection with others. And so I'll just ask you, you know, just to think about for a moment, have you put any of your competitive self into shadow in one way or another? The impulse. That just natural, normal impulse to be competitive. How have you maybe put your competitive self into shadow? How have you decided that it was bad or wrong and then just kind of opted out, right? And then either it turned into like out of control kind of competition or just taking yourself out of the game, diminishing yourself. What would it look like if you were to deeply honor and appreciate your competitive self? what would it look like if you were to deeply honor and appreciate your competitive self? What would you be doing differently? I want you to actually jot down some notes on this. What would you be doing differently right now if you weren't afraid or ashamed of your competitive self? If you really honored your competitive self, what would you be doing differently right now? I know for myself, one of the ways that I honor my competitive self is when I see other entrepreneurs that I admire and they put out like something amazing, I'm like, ooh, always first, right? Because I'm always working on the jealousy, like most of the time first. It's like this pang of like, oh, right? Like all the things that we've been talking about today. But from there, I'm like, ooh, what can I learn from what she's doing, right? Like, and how can I, up myself? Now, we don't want this to be like on a steroids way, right? Because that's back in shadow again, always trying to be better, 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 better. But in a really healthy, competitive way, right? And when I see my colleagues that I know putting out amazing things and my competition gets activated, I'll write to them and I'll say, first of all, wow, woman, that is like amazing. Like that email that you wrote was amazing, or this new program is amazing, and it is inspiring me to want, right, to do more or to, whatever it is, right? So what would you be doing differently if you actually honored your competitive spirit and self? Looks like we have a hand raised, so I'm going to take it. Magdalena.
Oh, I thought it went down. But
oh, okay.
But since you ask, I can just share.
Yeah, share briefly a takeaway. What are you seeing?
I loved how you told the story.
Mm.
Your tone of voice and everything, it just took me very deep. And what I got out of it, it's really this empowerment story. Like, I always was so afraid that if I don't start with something, somebody else will do it. So I was really surprised with the sleeper part, because I would never think of being a sleeper.
Yeah.
And then the sleeper just said, where do I have it? Oh, my gosh. And he said that he's just for me. Like, it fits only me. And only I can wear this slipper. And the slipper is transparent, which is like, it's authentic. You can see through him.
Yeah.
It shows your feet, nobody else.
Yeah.
So it was huge. But I have to tell you, I burst in tears when you started to talk about the fairy godmother. Because I realized I come from Poland, but I live in Ireland. And my time in Ireland is finishing up. I will have to go back to my home country. And when you said about the godmother, the fairy godmother, Ireland is full of fairies.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that Ireland was my birthplace, like my empowerment birthplace.
Yeah.
And Ireland, the goddess of Ireland, Eiru, is the goddess of sovereignty. So I was like walking through my kitchen and like crying out loud. Because it's like she's saying, now you remember, now you reminded yourself of your own power, and just put the slipper on and go.
I love it. Oh, I'm so happy to hear it. Thank you for sharing that, Magdalena.
So thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I'm gonna put you back on mute right now, but I'll say this. It's actually perfect segue into what I wanted to just lightly touch on next. If we had a 5-day retreat, we would go into all of these pieces very deeply. We're not going to go into this piece at all, but I'll just toss this to you guys if you want to go into it on your own. I wanted to just mention, you probably noticed from the story, that there were three mothers in the story. And this this concept of mother is actually vital to our empowerment. The ways that we get nurtured and nourished and seen and heard and validated. Now, that can be from any figure in our lives, right? But oftentimes it's a mother figure. Can oftentimes make so much of a difference with all of these pieces that we're talking about. And in this story, there was, you know, the mother of fantasy that, you know, really we never really, really get. Also, she, you know, maybe the one that we vow to be good to or, you know, whatever it is. In this story, there was the wicked stepmother, you know, the mother that we feel criticizes us, holds us back. And then in this story, there was also the fairy godmother, the one who really sees us truly for who we are and mirrors us and validates us and supports us. And you know, I think we all have all three of those mothers inside of us. And so, you know, tons of work to do there. I'll let you, you know, do that on your own, but I did just want to put that out there for you. All right. We still have a little bit more work to do today. So let's keep on going. I want to give you each an opportunity to connect with the Cinderella. Some of you already have, and we'll take that deeper. And if you haven't, we're just going to take it all deeper. I want to give you all opportunity to connect with the Cinderella who is the queen inside of you, you know, the Cinderella at the end of the story, the empowered queen. I want to give you an opportunity to connect with her and hear from her and really lean in to her energy, embody her energy a bit more. And so I invite you, we're going to just close our eyes for a few minutes. I invite you to close your eyes. Take a couple of nice, nourishing deep breaths in and out, really connecting to your body as you breathe, connecting to all of the wisdom that you hold inside of your body, inside of your cells, inside of your DNA. Bring yourself fully present to this moment right here and call down in front of you in human form your inner queen. Call down in human form in front of you your inner queen, your inner Cinderella as queen. And I invite you first to just take her in visually. See what your inner queen looks like. Notice your queen's hair. Notice what your queen wears. Notice the expression on her face. Notice how she holds herself. Notice her energy. And really begin to connect to your queen. You can connect through the eyes, really see her and have her see you. You can connect through the touch, take her hands in yours. And I invite you also to connect through the breath, so start breathing in sync with your inner queen. Just inhaling and exhaling and seeing your inner queen in front of you, hands in yours, connecting deeply with this one that has always been inside of you, that is always waiting to be paid more attention, to be activated more deeply. And as you connect with your queen, I invite you to ask her, what is it that you want me to know? What is it that you want me to know? She may speak her, you may hear it, you may see it, you may feel it. What does she want you to know? Continuing to connect even more deeply with your inner queen, her hands in yours, seeing each other, breathing together. Ask your inner queen, what does she need from you to play a bigger role in your life? What does she need from you to play a bigger role in your life? Continuing to connect deeply with her, really be in her energy. Asking your inner queen, what are the obstacles that she wants you to be on the lookout for? What are the things that she wants you to be on the lookout for? Continuing to connect with her for just a little bit longer. Ask her, what is one thing that she would like for you to do between now and the end of the weekend? What is one thing that she would like for you to do over the next few days before the end of the weekend? And your inner queen has a gift for you, an object ask her to present this object to you right now. Let her show it to you. And as she shows you this object, ask her what it symbolizes. What is this object for? How can you use it? What does it symbolize? She might tell you. She also might not, which is fine. And whatever the object is, ask your queen to put it directly into the part of your body that you need it the most, that you need its energy the most. Put it directly in. And take some moments to really absorb this gift and to absorb the energy of the gift. Really take it in. And then taking hands with your inner queen one more time, really feeling her energy, feeling her energy move through her arms into yours. Really being with all that you've taken in, ask her to share with you a short phrase, a mantra or a new belief that you are ready to really step into. Ask her to share with you a new belief, a mantra, a phrase that you're really ready to step into. Shorter is better. And whatever it is, if you are in a place where you can do this, I invite you to really stand. If you're not already standing, stand up. Feel your feet on the ground. And say this belief out loud. This new belief or mantra that you're actually ready to step into. Taking one more moment and then allowing your queen to fade into the distance, knowing that you're taking exactly what you need from her today and that she's there for you whenever you need her. And then allowing your eyes to flutter open, jotting down any notes you want to make from that experience. Okay, so we're almost at the end of our journey for today. We've done a lot of work together, and it's been amazing to be able to just share all of this with you. As I said when we began, we could have easily spent an entire week on this material, and my intention, again, is not to just tie it up in a neat bow for you, but rather to have stirred the cauldron with you so that the awarenesses that were ready to rise to the surface are rising and the energies that are ready to be more deeply activated for you are getting activated. My deep hope is that the work that we've done together today is a catalyst for you, a catalyst for deeper change and for deeper empowerment. a catalyst for moving beyond the ways that jealousy holds you back and towards the sacred and powerful gold and confidence and self-love and self-respect and respect for others that's held in the highest expression of competition. And as I said earlier, breakthroughs lead to transformations if you are willing to now work with the new awarenesses, ideas, feelings, energies that are come to the surface today. Continue to journal with these energies, continue to dialogue with these energies, these ideas, work the threads, really work them. If over the last 3 hours as you've been participating, you've had the feeling for yourself of, I desire for my own workshops to go even deeper, or that you desire to masterfully hold space for deeper issues in your own client work, then I have an opportunity that might be perfect for you. Of the many, many things that I've learned in the nearly 20 years of being a practitioner, one of the most important is this. The more skilled that I am at supporting my clients to navigate their fear, the more opportunity my clients then have to be able to take aligned action to their goals, to achieve their goals, and to feel happy and satisfied as they do it. As a practitioner and also as a human being, you probably know that fear is one of the top obstacles for clients or for ourselves to feeling empowered, to feeling good enough, to feeling confident, to feeling motivated to take action. And when you don't know how to help clients work with fear, usually clients end up stuck or taking self-sabotage actions or moving forward maybe on an outer level, but they're miserable inside. And then they don't feel so great about the work that you're doing together. I can't tell you how many practitioners have come to me over the years saying that they need help because they're having trouble moving clients forward or going deep with clients or getting to the deeper issues. And when we take a look, we see that fear has been in the way for the client, but also for the practitioner. When we know how to support ourselves and our clients through fear, this is when so much can happen. This is when you become the transformational practitioner that can really go deep with clients, that your clients feel that you see them and get them in a way that nobody else does. When you are masterful at supporting your clients through their fear, obstacles loosen up in magical ways, and they're able to move forward with more confidence and more alignment. And when you know how to support your clients through fear, you spend way less time feeling stumped on how to move your stuck clients forward. You also spend way less time questioning yourself or wondering what you could be doing differently. Knowing how to support clients through fear really is like a superpower, and it's an advanced practitioner superpower. And yet most practitioners don't know how to support their clients through fear. One of the reasons that practitioners get stuck in navigating fear is because their approach to fear is based in misunderstanding of the nature of fear and what fear actually means. You see, most practitioners approach fear with their clients by working to destroy the fear or slay the fear or simply ignore or bypass the fear. And these strategies, while they're well-intentioned, almost never work. In fact, these strategies almost always make the fear bigger and more persistent and more havoc-wreaking. In trying to slay the fear, they're missing the single greatest opportunity that fear presents, which is the opportunity to transmute fear into deep and lasting transformation. When understood at the deepest levels, fear is actually a catalyst. It's a superpower and a tool of transformation. And so all of this is why the Befriend Your Fear technique is one of my show-stopping go-to strategies when working with individuals and when working with groups. The technique is like a transformational cocktail that connects clients deeply to the core of who they are, that illuminates their fears in ways that help them see with crystal clarity, and that activates the process of becoming friends with the fear, not slaying, becoming friends, so that they can actually take actions and move forward towards their goals. The befriend your fear process activates deep change, and it does so by working through not just the intellectual level of learning and processing, but also the heart level, the soul level, and the body level. It accelerates awarenesses on all of those levels and supports clients energetically to shift long-lasting and embedded fears. So I include the basic level of the Befriend Your Fear technique in the Sacred Depths Transformational Practitioner Training. And now, for the first time ever, and possibly the only time, I'm not sure yet, I'm going to share this powerful technique as a standalone training, which is going to include the basic and the more advanced applications of the technique. So the Befriend Your Fear training is a 2-day virtual, in-depth, intimate, and highly interactive experience where I'll be teaching you first about the nature of fear and the different human interactions with fear. And then from there, you'll learn the overarching step-by-step Befriend Your Fear process, as well as 3 different dynamic and transformational techniques that you can use both in your one-on-one work with clients as well as in your group. Throughout the 2 days, I'll be doing demos, and we'll be breaking down what I did so that you know exactly how to use the techniques for yourself. And we'll also have many opportunities for partner practice, for practice in the group, and feedback. The practice is really powerful and key to being able to not only understand the technique, but more importantly, to really own it inside of yourself. And then, of course, in order to teach the Befriend Your Fear process to you, I need to take you through your own deep inner work around fears that are active for you. The inner work that we do together is very transformational. It loosens up the barriers that you've been putting in your way when it comes to your business, your visibility, your relationships, and any other area where fear is rearing its head. We're on Zoom for this training so that we can see each other's faces and so that we can interact throughout. There's a lot of time for processing and sharing and for connecting both with me as well as connecting with others in the group. The training is going to take place on September 3rd and 4th, and the full price of the program is $19.97. But just to honor those of you who are participating in this workshop today, I'm happy to provide a special rate of $12.97. Or you can split it 3 monthly payments into 437, and that's good until next Tuesday. I should say, anyone here that's in advanced depth, that this isn't for you because a version of this is going to be included in advanced depth. So you can find all of the information about this at my website. It's joannalindenbaum.com/fear. joannalindenbaum.com/fear. I wish my team would have given that link a different name. But anyway, and because of the deep work and the advanced training, there's only a limited number of spots available. So I wanted to let all of you know about this opportunity first and at this exclusive rate just for you before I let the rest of my community know about it starting next week. And the training obviously isn't for everyone, but it is for you if you like to go deep, if you want to do some of your own soul work around fears and obstacles, and if you desire to take your clients to more profound depths and self-awareness and experiences. So it's joannalindenbaum.com/fear, and it would be my absolute honor to share the space with you for those 2 days. It's actually 2 days plus. It's 2 days, and then we'll have a follow-up session a few weeks later. And to just share this beloved and life-changing technique with you. Okay, we are almost at time. I want to make sure we have time for takeaways and any questions that you have. I think what we'll do is I'll start to bring our circle to a close, and then for those of you that want to share takeaways and have questions, I'm happy to stay on the line for as long as need be. But in order to start to move towards closing, take a moment. We've been through so much today in a short period of time. I know that there's so much that hopefully that you're taking away. I hope. But what are some of the biggest takeaways for you? And take a moment and write those down. What are your top two or three biggest takeaways from today? It's good for integration to ask yourself this question. So I am going to post a thread in the Coaching Revolution Facebook group on takeaways, and I would just love if you were to share there what your takeaway is. I'll do that when we're done today. And in a moment, I'm also going to open up the floor for takeaways and questions. But for now, to move us to close, for those of you that need to hop off at 3 Eastern, in so saying, the work of this circle is done, but really only just begun. May you return to your ordinary lives, extraordinary women. May you walk with empowerment in your heart and your soul, knowing that you are good enough, that there is enough, and that there is enough for all of us. May you shine your light brightly out into the world in the ways that you're meant to, loving yourself and loving others and remembering exactly who you are. I'll take a deep breath in. And an exhale out to seal it all in. I thank you all so much for your beautiful, whether I heard your voice or not, for your beautiful presence and your energy and for showing up to do this work, which is not easy to do, not easy to look at. Just really thank you, hand on heart, and honor you. And with that, I'd love to hear before we hop off the phone, takeaways and any questions at all that you have for me. Shawnette.
Hi, honey. I thought it was just starting at 9. Did I miss it?
Yeah, you missed the whole thing.
Oh, my God. This time conversion thing is not working. I have been so looking forward to this. Is it going to be recorded?
Yes, the whole thing is recorded,
oh,
and you should get
God.
It by tonight. I'm sorry. It must have been that. Yeah,
I've been so looking forward to this and waiting for it, and I missed the whole thing.
I am so sorry. Yeah, I think something must have happened when you changed the times over. But you'll get the recording very soon. My team is going to work on it. You'll get it tonight or tomorrow at the latest.
Okay. Well, I guess it's hard to ask a question with.
Yeah, but I know that you and I will connect. So work through. You'll see, like, a lot. You'll get a lot as you listen through. You'll get all of the transmissions and be in the energy. And anything that comes up, you can ask me afterwards, 100%.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
Well, is this something that is a double-sided coin? Like if something keeps happening again and again, there's obviously a pattern there. So is that something that if I keep getting things taken from me,
yeah.
Is that because there's something inside me I need to heal? Like perhaps my mother would.
I don't want to say for sure, right? Because sometimes we get things taken from us and it has nothing to do with us, you know, like that's one of the problems with like when we just say we manifest everything in our lives, because sometimes just things suck and it's not coming from our energy. But because I know you a little bit and you've shared with me a little bit, you know, this pattern of things keep on getting taken, and because you are sensing it, Shamet, my sense is yes. And as you go through, you'll see, because it's a double-sided coin, and you'll see how you might be drawing this to you energetically. For sure. I know, yeah. I have been in that place for sure, so I'm a sister with you on that. It's not true for everybody, but I definitely have drawn it to myself because of energetics.
How did you break that?
You've got to listen to the workshop.
Okay.
You're going to love it. You're going to love
it. Okay,
so
when
much.
Am I going to get it? When do I get it?
either tonight or tomorrow, I promise.
Great.
Make sacred space for yourself over the weekend, yeah. And then let me know how it goes. Okay.
Well, it was really interesting. Real quick, though, I was listening to Marissa Peer just earlier about the I am enough, and I came on right as you were talking about I am enough.
I love it.
We are enough.
I love it. Yeah. So you'll bring that
little synchronicity.
Good. All right, Jessica.
Hey, Joanna. Can
Hi.
You hear me?
I can.
Hi. Good. So that was really fun. I love stories. I actually, I did my college thesis on fairy tales. So.
Oh, that's perfect. I love it.
Yeah. So anyway, so one thing that I that really hit me that I was surprised by was the glass slipper.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that some people have had, you know, talked about it, and I had a totally different reaction to it, which I think, you know, it's not either or. But
right.
The thing that really struck me about it was this idea that she's sort of, you know, leaving the ball quietly, you know, in rags and leaving this glass slipper behind. And
what really
struck me about that was this idea of, you know, just how many times in my life I've sort of had this fantasy of being discovered, kind of like, you know, and I think it's a very female fantasy. Like I was thinking, you know, I was remembering, I mean, not that I have any interest in this now, but, you know, when I was 11 or something, how, you know, all the girls' magazines that I read always had this idea of being discovered as a model. And the idea was sort of that you'd just be walking along the street being your quiet, good self. And someone would just sort of discover you and pluck you out of oblivion. And I mean, you know, it's obviously that's kind of a ridiculous fantasy to me now. But then I was thinking about, you know, even now how there are things like in my jobs or, you know, with like creative ventures that I've done where I'll do something, but then kind of hide it away from everyone, but secretly hope that someone will find it.
Find the glass slipper.
I'm like, what is up with that?
Yeah. So, so first of all, I love it. This is what I love about these archetypal stories is like so much can come through, you know, and this, I love this and it's so potent. And, you know, especially because it's coming up for you, I would say like that's the part of the story that I would really keep on working with. You know, you can go back in and write from the voice of the prince when he finds the glass slipper, or go back into the moment in the story where Cinderella it turns from, you know, the fancy dress back to the rags and write from her voice from that moment in the story. And what's happening, you continue to work with those energies. Take the breakthrough to the transformation by just persistently and consistently working with it.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love it. Thank you for sharing that. Who is this from Massachusetts, 0291?
That's me, Jean.
Hi.
Hi, it's Jean Papagni.
Hi, it's so good to hear your voice.
Hi. I'm so glad you chose me because I haven't connected with you in so long. And I wanted to say how powerful this was for me. It hit me on so many levels. And what the woman before me just said, I'm like flabbergasted. That concept of being discovered was a whole new piece that I hadn't looked at. And that is huge for me. Mm-hmm. And I so resonated with
that.
That's so
when you just said that, Jean. Yeah, I can feel.
I love it.
For you.
Yeah. I love it. And I wanted to share my takeaway. One of the most powerful pieces of this was the meditation with the queen. And I was so struck by how joyful she was. And every time she spoke to me, she had like a laugh in her voice. And she's like, girl, you got this. And the message to me was, or the mantra was, I am all that.
Yes.
And she just said it was such like joyful, like, this is the truth. Like, why are you denying this? And like, she was just in like joyful, playful curiosity about why I couldn't accept it or why I couldn't step into it. But she was supportive. She's like, you know, I'm here for you and call on me every day, but you know, girl, own it. So it was great. Thank you.
I love it. And again, I really want to encourage you to continue, right? Like, again, breakthrough to transformation. Like, we really unearthed a new energy here for you that has been hiding underneath, and it's clearly so strong. Work with it so you can continue to connect with her, like, through the visualization. You can dialogue with her and write with her. I'm actually also seeing you putting on music and dancing as her with that joyful energy, or taking a walk around your neighborhood, the whole walk, be in that energy of this queen. Like, really bring it in deeply so that you have access to her whenever you need it.
Yeah, I'm excited to do that. And by the way, while I've been on this call, about 6 hummingbirds have come into my deck. It's been amazing. Oh, so
magic.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. All right. Renee.
Oh, hi, Joanna. So much that people said is so resonant for me. And there's a couple of big pieces in a place I'm stuck that like a lot came up. Like, so I'm really feeling a connection here to my fear of visibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I also related to what Jessica shared about, like,
yeah, so I love it. It didn't even occur to me, that piece. It's amazing. Yes.
Yeah. I read the same magazines that Jessica read. And in fact, you know, like that, one of the, I think I've shared this before, like this idea of like to be good means like not to brag. Like my mom always would say, like, you know, people shouldn't brag. And she was like, talk badly about people who did. And my grandmother would say, like, good merchandise speaks for itself, right? And this belief, like, I have to like toil and work so hard to like get to the ball. But then there's this other piece of like when I'm at the ball, like feeling like it's all an illusion, like it's going to be taken away in a second, like it's not real, like I didn't earn it and it's not going to be sustained. The challenges that I'm really feeling are, there were two questions. One, when you were talking about the inner stepmother and how it can be used in more nourishing ways. And when you were talking about the inner stepmother, like my whole body like closed up, like the tears started, the throat closed, and it really stuck. It's like, well, how do I use this in a more nourishing way when it's literally shutting me down?
Yeah.
And the competition piece, because it's funny, I never heard competition was bad until I started like more work in the feminine. Like my competition was so natural to me, but I competed in a way. It's like, and I still feel that coming up, even sitting in the knowledge of this work, where it's like, competition means winning, and winning means making everyone wrong.
Yeah. So I think those two things are linked for you. Like,
yeah,
you know, my sense is, first of all, with the inner stepmother, she's probably very close to who your mother is, even just because I know you a bit.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You know, so, and
I was like, that is my mother.
Yeah. And I'm going to make a guess here. And I want you to work on this and see. It may or may not be true. But my sense is that actually her superpower is healthy competition. Like, that's what's embedded underneath it all for you. Because you're naturally kind of making the link, just even as you're sharing. And so I think it would be worthwhile exploring. as much as you're willing to engage with that stepmother, and I know it's hard because she's so harsh inside of you, so be gentle with yourself, take it as you can, but see if you can lean in to, you know, unburden her, right? The more that we engage with these shadows, the more we can unburden them and actually bring them, like, come to manage them instead of them managing us. And so I would just continue as you can to engage with her and see what's there. Go through the layers and the layers and the layers, even if it's stuff that you already know. Like I was saying to Michelle before, like, that's where you should pay even more attention.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's also, like, someone else said it was, like, their father, and I was like, yeah, I'm like, it's definitely, like, both parents.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have the loving parent model, right? So.
Yeah. So you need to cultivate that side of yourself. So then there's also that toss about the mothers, like that there might be some stuff around the fairy godmother for you too, to cultivate her inside of you.
Yeah.
So put definite places to work.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. I'm going to get to anyone that has their hands raised. I'm going to get to you. So it looks like there's two more. 4217 are your last numbers.
It's Rose again, Joanna.
Hi, Rose.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
So the moment may pass with this, but I really want to give my voice to it, and I do feel safe, completely safe doing this.
Yeah.
And these are my answers to the question, power over, power under lineage.
Yes.
As an African woman, I feel I am not allowed my power base. And even though the highest science on the planet agrees our collective origin is upon that continent, I feel the African sisterhood is not allowed their power base.
Yeah.
As an African woman, it feels like my grief is not as important or as valid as a white woman's grief. As an African woman, it feels like my pain cannot be shown, but it is for me to accept it and expect it. And as an African woman, I feel the pressure from this society to pass on this legacy of disempowerment to my daughter and my grandsons, in order to ensure their safety and to prolong their lives. And that's something I process consciously or subconsciously every day. Thank you for the space, Joanna.
Thank you. I'm so, well, of course, you know, I'm glad that you felt safe to share it and to speak it. And what I'm wondering is, through the seeing it and writing it, and then even taking it a step further and speaking it out loud in this space, what do you see as opportunity for you here? Is there any opportunity for you here?
There's so much opportunity, because I truly believe that we are all evolving beyond these constructs and all the isms. That's where we're going. And my opportunity is to truly participate in this collective evolution. And I'm deeply interested in the empowerment of all women, because it's all of us that hold the keys to the change. So there's masses of opportunity, and I intend to walk in those opportunities. Because when I met my queen, I was handed the scepter. It felt like I got the mantle, Joanna.
Mm.
And when I took that in, the crown of that scepter settled in my womb, and something happened for me, a shift happened for me. So I'm not deluded or dissuaded in any way.
I'm so glad that all of that came forward, and I can see how you're stepping more into your power, and my hope upon hope upon hope, because I know that every word you've spoken is true, is that more and more people will wake up to support you and your sisters in it. So thank you for sharing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Yes! And Tammy, where are you? There you are, Tammy.
Hi. I just find it interesting that, like, I'm doing this right after, like, all my plans changed about my life this morning. And so I don't know, what came up with the queen was, I just wanted to share, because basically I'm now looking at the idea of closing my practice of 20 years and moving sooner, and just things have kind of swirled a little differently than I thought they would. And, you know, if I think about all my insecurities about kind of like what came up in our work today, and, you know, giving up this practice and having to start new somewhere, and also this idea of like, no, I can actually stop and take time, and this is like maybe a blessing, and just a lot swirling in everything. The queen kind of came in. I didn't have an image of her, which I usually do, I think, just because I'm like, everything was really stirred up for me this morning. But what was important was, you know, she just, again, I think all my queens have kind of told me to, like, you know, pause and take time and really just kind of come from that kind of sitting on your throne space of, like, knowledge and knowing. And she handed me a black crystal that would be going between my third eye and my my heart space. So ultimately, like, it really felt like my throat chakra, which is just fascinating and interesting. And
it makes perfect sense to me.
yeah. So yeah. I'm kind of glad this happened timing-wise, because, there's just so much that's going to be stirred up for me now. And I can go back to my old ways, or I can kind of really keep stepping into this part of me. So thank you for holding that space for me today.
Yeah, you're so welcome. It feels like it was perfect timing. And I love that it's your throat chakra. You've been working on that, and it is time for the next step there. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I think we are officially done for today. Thank you so much. Again, my heart, just a hand on my heart, just so appreciative of all of you. I want to hear from you. Please share what came up with you, for you through this. Let me know. I want to hear from you. Sending you all a lot of love.
The moderator has left the conference.